Cool.
It's good.
Does Riff need a timeout?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for episode number 93 of Video Games Hot Dog.
Woohoo!
How's it going, fellas?
It's going good.
Fellas.
This is the last episode from the home office in Mesa, Arizona.
Gosh. Not forever.
Yeah.
No.
For
about to leave on a fancy trip to San Francisco. San Francisco.
We'll be doing swapping up the remote member for a while.
Yep.
Yeah. Swapping up the remote member is my cyber sex band.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah?
Cyber sex is a thing. What I was trying to go for was like some sort of a cyberpunk, like a future cyber sex band, not like just people jerking off at each other on video Skype, which is, I'm afraid, what I implied. So let's not do that when we're recording
okay.
The next episode of Video Game. I mean, I usually masturbate during these recordings, but I do it silently
mm-hmm.
and without my hands and without anybody noticing.
Huh.
Yeah, it's, you know.
That's some sly technique there. Like these cycles of being excited and then you're sort of like chill for a little while and then you get really loud.
Yeah, I had to learn to do that when I was in the Army.
Hmm. So you're a master ninja of masturbating.
Mm-hmm. What have you guys been up to?
I saw a movie.
What'd you see?
I saw Side Effects, the new thing with...
Is that like a romantic comedy about brain drugs?
No, it's not. It's about brain drugs. It's not a romantic comedy at all.
Is it a horror movie?
No, it's a drama.
Did you go see it so that you could find out what the plot of your next novel is going
to
be?
Oh, mean. No, it's... What's that actor's name?
Who is mean? The guy that makes fun of the guy with a stupid idea or the guy with a stupid idea?
I can't think. Judd. No, not Judd Nelson.
Judge Reinhold?
No.
Judd Apatow.
No. It's Nelson a J Mandela. Name. What's that actor's friggin' name? All right.
Jeff
I'm
Goldblum.
I'm going to have to look it up.
John
Goodman.
I can only remember, like, it's the actor that Jenny likes and...
Jenny. Is that why you think it's a J?
That's possible.
Jay-Z?
Anyway, it's this movie about this... this woman who's got the depression and her psychiatrist puts her on various brain medications and...
Jude Law,
that's
the one. Ah.
And...
the android.
Yeah. And I can't really... There's a couple twists that make it interesting, so I can't really say much more about it, but it's really good. It takes a lot of time to build up because the entire first act is just about how this woman is sad, and so it's not very interesting. But then once shit starts going down, it gets really interesting, and then it gets really interesting.
Are there supernatural things going on, or is it
no,
just...
No, it's just
why
it's
did you
dramatic stuff. Because my mom recommended it,
oh.
And my mom has pretty comparable taste in movies to me.
Your mom has pretty comparable taste in movies.
That's
to you.
Right, she does. But yeah, the third act.
So
totally
was your mom also a big fan of Aragon?
Aragon, I didn't see it.
I don't think that anyone actually saw it. That was that like that 16-year-old kid.
Oh right,
he had a very similar approach to yours, where he just like watched some fantasy movies and then wrote down what happened and sold it as a novel.
That's totally not what I'm doing. It's blown out of proportion for the sake of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Aragon reminds
Riff.
Me of. Erewhon, which is like that nowhere.
Oh yeah, the nowhere
thing.
Spelled backwards.
Or Arrowid, which is that website that tells you what to expect
what
when you're
to,
expecting
yeah.
to be super high. What to expect when you're pregnant with a peyote baby.
With a machine elf.
Yeah. Good old Terrence McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about Terrence McKenna a couple of days ago. Because your phone kept vibrating like a fucking machine elf trying to ruin our podcast. At least that means that the sound is off. But now what it means is that Riff's attention is also off because he's answering a goddamn text
oh,
message.
Oh, man, I wish I'd seen these text messages like 3 minutes ago. Oh, wow.
Who was it? Oh, because I started following Clifford Pickover on Twitter. He's this guy that wrote these. He's like this crazy prolific, like a sort of a less reputable Martin Gardner. I'm gonna say like a he's like the
evil puzzle overlord.
He's like the cracked magazine to Douglas Hofstadter's Mad magazine.
Wow.
I guess
okay.
it's a bunch of very accessible, very bite-sized like math. He's real into fractals still.
Huh.
Like since he's been just like collecting sweet ass pictures of fractals since the 90s. But he released like a book a year from the late 80s until still apparently. And they were this one book in particular that they had in my high school library was just like super interesting to me when I was in high school because it was just a bunch of stuff about mazes and like procedural generation of artwork and procedural generation of just random visual patterns and
stuff.
What
was his name again?
Clifford Pickover.
Huh, never heard of
him. Anyway, he yesterday randomly posted to Twitter, retweet this if you know who Terrence McKenna was. And I did know, and I did not retweet it.
Well, yeah, because there doesn't seem to be any content in that.
Yeah, well, I think he's trying to figure out how many of his followers know who Terrence McKenna is so that he can prove a point.
I see.
Like, I'm guessing that he was at a bar on acid. And I don't know if... Like, he says all this... Like, he's like seems to be really interested in, like, the nature of consciousness and stuff. And I don't know if it's because he's, like, some weird stoner or if it's...
Or if it's
really
a science
understand.
Thing.
Maybe I should
I mean,
email.
Those aren't
Maybe
mutually
I should just
exclusive.
Email him and say, hey, what's your deal? Are you like some, are you some, like,
subject, your deal.
Yeah, your deal. What is
what
it?
Is it?
Are you high as fuck or why do you keep looking at fractals? Like, this was, I don't think that's a thing anymore, right? Like, you know, if you were, say, writing a book that took place in, you know, like Neo Hong Kong and it was the 90s and you were writing a book about 2034 and you needed to describe how they made a sword real sharp, then all right, I need to look at a bunch of fractals to do research on this. Like how might this theoretical nearly infinite data storage work that will justify me having some sort of retractable robo boner?
Wow. If it hadn't been something that he'd been doing for years, I would say, oh, he just found out about them, so they're exciting to him. But if it's been like a lifelong obsession, that's a little weird. You think?
I don't. I mean, I think he's obsessed with a lot of things.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's how I learned about Penrose tiles, which was interesting, sort of. That seems like a weird so there was just this kind of nerdy monk or whatever who noticed, wow, you can make a lot of patterns out of the same tile if you just rotate it. Here's a book of all the ones I thought of. Like, okay.
Yeah. Monks had a lot of thinking time.
That's a weird thing to have survived for 400 years. Is this? Oh, here's all these different ways in which a square made out of two equally sized rectangles, one black and one white, can make attractive patterns. Like, thanks. History.
Well, but I mean, wasn't genetics also like a bored monk? You know, like.
Yeah.
Was a bored monk the primitive version of a machine elf? It's like, oh, he's half man, half machine, but machines were just like a wooden lever. So it's just like, oh, I got a splinter. Now I'm a cyborg. Oh, man. This is great. See, this was like, it's like Jules Verne cyberpunk, although he had brass cogs and shit. So who were the science fiction writers that were like, after the board was discovered, they were like, oh, this is going to change everything. I need to write some speculative fiction about, oh, he has an exoskeleton made out of wood. He can move, well, not very fast. It was sort of hard to hit him, I guess. You're going to need an axe.
Yeah, you're going to need an axe.
was there anything such as science fiction like prior to the Industrial Revolution, more or less? Like, what would that have even been before there was like science, I guess?
I mean, there has to have been, right?
Well,
I mean, maybe it just
didn't survive. Yeah.
Well, but
I mean, there are
like,
certainly markers, like You know,
I mean, was there much? I mean, do we even know of much fiction before the Industrial Revolution?
Yeah, I mean, there were lots of plays and all kinds.
Okay. We don't know of much fiction, right? Though, because it like prior, because I mean, printing press to Industrial Revolution was how long? Was printing press like 1600s?
Well, it depends on whether you're counting in the in China or in the Western world, right? I think it was 1400s in the Western world, but I could be wrong.
But I mean, even for the first several decades or 100 years of that,
it was just Bibles.
It was just Bibles over and over again, or like newspapers, you know, or advertisements for coffee.
Advertisements for Bibles.
Man, I'm so in love with the idea of a wooden exoskeleton, like third century cyberpunk. Although they I'm
still,
sure there was
well, it's, already, it's still
wood
brown.
Was old tech, boards were old tech in this cyberpunk, not steampunk. Cyberpunk isn't brown. Cyberpunk is silver with maybe like a glowing blue
neon. Yeah,
but is it cyber if it's not if it's just wood?
Sure.
So are vampires cyborgs when they get staked through the heart?
No.
No, I mean, if I get shot with a metal bullet, I'm not a cyborg.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
If I stab Riff with a knife made out of a circuit board, I don't know, because maybe we're both in love with the same fat girl or something. I'm trying to imagine when that would happen. Like, why would I be real mad at you and also have a
sharpened
knife made out of a
circuit
board? Yeah.
Well, but like, if you get some metal fillings, you can pick up radio stations, right? So like that's like being a cyborg.
I guess I'm half man, half radio. Yeah, I'm half man, half no soap. Yeah, lumber cyborg. Oh man, you could get lumbar support with lumber. Would your body probably wouldn't reject wood as badly as it would. So this was like the prequel to Tetsuo the Iron Man. The guy
Tetsuo the Wooden Man.
Tetsuo the Wood Man.
Oh, and that's how the Mega Man bosses were invented.
I mean, in a way, Pinocchio was sort of a cyberpunk woodborg, right? Because he was made of wood, and then he became.
He was
real.
Like a wood android. He was like a wood droid.
I would go with android more than.
Do you think he walked? Do you think he would walk up to puppet ladies and say, "Do you have any wood in you? Would you like some?" And so. I never actually saw the Disney cartoon of Pinocchio, and I never really read the story of Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. Is there something where they turn into a donkey and smoke a cigar?
Yeah, there's like the island or something of the bad boys that do rotten stuff and smoke cigars, and growing donkey's ears is for some reason part of that. I don't remember how it goes.
Oh, because they're like asses of themselves or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, that seems to have been an image from like, you know, Midsummer Night's Dream, that dude being turned into an ass.
Isn't there some part of it where he's also in a whale or something?
Yeah. Yeah, he and Geppetto get eaten by Monstro the whale.
I don't remember any of this.
I just didn't see it, so that's my excuse for not remembering it.
I have seen it, and it's buried deep in my subconscious.
Yeah, I feel like I saw it once, like way back in the day, and the donkey ears bit freaked the hell out of me.
I think all of my memories of it are from like reading a storybook of it, but it wasn't mine, so it wasn't like one of the 30 books that I've just memorized. Speaking of 30 books, have you guys played 30 video games?
I've played 3 video games.
Oh my god, what are they?
I played, on iPad I played a game called Year Walk, which is it's a sort of a first-person horror point-and-click kind of thing based on, I guess there's a ancient Scandinavian legend sort of thing of... If a guy wanted to know what his future was going to be, he would fast for an entire day in a dark room, not seeing anybody, and then on the stroke of midnight, he'd walk out into the frozen, dark forest and if he made it all the way through the forest to the church, he would have visions of what his future was going to be like.
And if he didn't, he just died.
Well, he
would also get a vision of his future, but he just wouldn't have a
future. Part of the legend is that these various mythological Scandinavian monsters would try and stop him from getting there.
Also, the future was always fractals.
So, yeah, it's sort of this point-and-click, scary sort of thing. The art is really nice. It's not, like, hand-drawn, I don't think, but it has that sort of hand-drawn feel to it. And it's unusual... foreign, you know, it's got that flavor of mythology, but mythology you're not familiar with because, sure, assuming you're not Scandinavian, there's a companion app to it that has some like nice woodcuts of these legendary fictional monsters and tells you what the legends were, and that gives you some more context about these monsters that you're encountering. And then once you've beaten the game, that companion app has some more stuff unlocked in it that's as interesting as the entire rest of the game, actually. And I can't really say any more about it, but that's pretty cool and well worth it. There's another game I played that you'll probably like a lot, Kevin, called Puzzle Retreat, which is it's like a
sliding block puzzle. Yeah, I talked about that one like a week or two ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
It's not a very distinctive name, so
no, it really isn't.
But yeah, I played a bunch of that. That's pretty good.
I didn't sliding ice buy blocks. Any of the like unlockable things, any of the unlockable puzzles.
I have not yet. I mean, it comes with 3 like 24 or 26 puzzle sets, and I finished the first one and half of the second one so far.
Yeah, I sort of blew through that in like a day or two and was like not excited enough about the puzzles to want to give them any additional funds.
Some of them are more satisfying than others, of course. I prefer the ones where you can work out which one of these things has to be a certain way, and then everything else falls into place from that, rather than the ones where every single option could have multiple alternatives.
Yeah, I mean, it collapses down to a pretty small set of things that can happen. There were only a couple where I didn't feel like I had any idea where to start. So it's definitely an interesting idea. That was the one where I talked about I actually read sort of the genesis of that game, and that was one that started out as a game about cutting down trees in a forest.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And then they want, like, they didn't like the idea, the anti-environmental message of that. So, like, it went through a bunch of different iterations before it ended up being like a sort of like a sliding block, sliding.
Yeah, the sliding ice blocks has a good, I don't know, texture feel to it.
Yeah, yeah.
More so than I feel like a falling tree would.
Sure. Although you can see how that, like, it's kind of the same thing, right? Sort of, except for the fact that the blocks can slide over each other and jump across the frozen pieces and stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting, like, that one. I think like it was like a year and a half from a first design to release. So,
yeah. The other thing I played was on PSP. I played a bunch of Patapon 3, which is obviously the third game in the Patapon series. But the Patapon series was what prompted me to buy a PSP Go in the first place, because just I love the art style of it, and the gameplay is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's got
prior to the Vita. Is that?
Yes,
it's like the little version of the PSP drive.
Yeah, no cartridge slot on it, so it's all downloadable from the PlayStation Store.
What are you going to do with your entire movie collection on UMD?
Well, fortunately, I never had a regular PSP, so that's not an issue. But yeah, it's a fairly simple, like rhythm game sort of structure, plus like leveling up and classes and skills for your dudes. And fortunately, they've simplified it pretty well from Patapon 2, because Patapon 2, you had like I think up to like a dozen guys in your army that you had to deal with. And in this one, you have exactly four. You've got one guy who's a bow class, and one guy who's a spear class, and one guy who's a shield class, and then your hero, which you get to choose a class for at the beginning of the game. And so you only have to deal with these four guys, and they removed a lot of the crafting mini games from the second one, which, although those were fun, they were only fun a couple of times, and you had to do them over and over and over and over again, and it was pretty terrible. So
I think I only played the
much
first
better
one.
Now. It's still pretty grindy, and I feel like the like when you go to your mission list and it says what the suggested average level of your dudes is for a mission, I feel like that's the number if you are an absolute expert at playing this game, and anybody realistically playing should probably double that number, because it's hard. This is the only game I can in my memory in which playing it caused me to have to put the machine down and like punch a pillow while shouting for a few minutes, because it did some real bullshit to me. But despite that, it's compelling. And it's got an interesting skill tree and level ups and gear that gets better and stuff like that.
Video games are basically the only thing that I ever really get super angry at.
Yeah, same
anymore.
Here.
And I wonder what that is. Is it just diverting any anger that I would have had towards anything else in the world?
You
get angry when you fuck up and break something, or
I also feel that video games are we don't find ourselves in a lot of situations where we feel like something totally unfair has just been done to us.
Yeah, that's true.
Like what situations like that are ordinary people in? I guess.
Relationships.
Yeah, I don't know. But then
jobs,
I don't
they don't like.
I mean, coming from our position of cisgendered heterosexual white male privilege.
Cisgendered?
Yes.
What is cisgendered?
I don't know how to define it without offending someone.
I've just never even heard
you have
term
probably
before.
Have already offended someone
if
just
I was
by
not,
using the term.
If I were to describe a traditional male female gender breakdown as normal, which I would not wanting to be gender normative, I would say that cisgendered means having a straightforward normal gender.
How is that spelled?
C-I-S. It's some stuff that people made up so that you can say, I am not transgendered, but I'm cool. I'm cool. Don't worry. I'm one of the good ones.
Huh.
It's a good word. We should teach everyone. Man, I fell off the wagon fucking hard.
Oh, did you start reading comments?
On my not reading comments. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
The filter, yeah.
So there were two things that I just couldn't stay the fuck out of. One was the Oscars, the Seth MacFarlane's Oscar performance, which everybody that I listen to when they talk on the internet just seems to be agreed that Seth MacFarlane has never been funny, and everything that he has ever done is socially irresponsible dreck.
That cannot be true. Like, you must be looking at communities that are specifically anti-Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, I am. I mean, I usually go to SethMacFarlaneSucksButts.com. Don't go to .org, because that's actually fanfic. But, yeah. No, you know, it's mostly Metafilter. But, yeah, so there was that, and then there was the parents suing a school for not letting their male-to-female transgendered six-year-old use the girls' bathroom.
How is the six-year-old transgender? Like, that seems...
You know what? Just asking that question makes you an asshole, Kevin.
I just don't understand.
I'm like, sorry.
Like, I feel
I'm
like
sorry, buddy.
Someone changing their gender, okay, or deciding,
you know, we're
to
just
change their gender
pissing,
seems like something
just,
you would do much later in life.
I shouldn't have even brought this up.
I'm just curious.
You're just like making everybody mad. I know. But because of our privilege, we don't.
I have to imagine that anybody that would be really mad by this is already logged.
Oh no, no! The people who are really mad listen even more. That's what I learned from watching Private Parts. Speaking of socially irresponsible assholes who've never done anything that wasn't horrible, let's hear it for Howard Stern. Oh man, I think that there has been a shift that is going to turn me into more of an asshole in the coming weeks. For a while I was sort of backsliding. Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew have started. They got the band back together and they've started doing a Loveline-esque podcast.
Didn't like his like daily news radio style show that it turned like the Adam Carolla show by itself. You just want him and Dr. Drew to do Loveline.
I think I do. Because I think that they need. I think that they need the randomized inputs of callers to really shine.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Anybody who liked Loveline and was not aware that Dr. Drew and Adam have started doing a podcast again. And the thing is, they're both nuts. Like, I don't think that either of them is broadly worth emulating.
I'm not super familiar with Dr. Drew. What's nuts about him? I never really watched Loveline.
He is a man with a hammer to whom every problem looks like a nail, and his hammer is being an addiction specialist.
Huh, okay.
And so it's that you're an alcoholic even though you've never had a beer. Like, everyone on earth should go to Al-Anon.
That's going to make that little room crowded, and it's going to take ages to get through the "Hi, my name is Bob."
I don't even know if you do that in Al-Anon.
But it's going to make it much easier to be anonymous.
True.
Security through obscurity.
I'm going to cut out the last 8 or 9 minutes of this podcast.
I don't think you should do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything we said was offensive at all.
Okay.
We could talk about killing some babies or something if you want to really
There's
get
goddamn
it up there.
Babies.
That's less offensive. What have you been playing, Kevin?
I have not played anything besides the assignment at all.
Nothing. Well, it was a pretty long assignment.
Yeah. So, this has been a rough week for me. I was working and then trying to finish the assignment and not realizing how long it would take, and spent all of my free time and some of my not free time playing.
All of your discretionary gaming minutes.
Yep.
I played a little bit more Bully, and I got too fed up.
Yeah. With,
I got too fed up with goofy controls on mini games that you only got to play once every 15 minutes or something to pass the thing, and the dealing with missions where you had to fight dudes and accidentally punching other dudes because of the controls. When you talked about getting angry at video games, I was thinking, what was I playing recently that just where Emily was getting on me for getting mad and yelling fuck all the time, and maybe I should take a break, and it was fucking Bully. Just because like, I didn't want to punch that girl. I wanted to punch the guy who just attacked me for no reason.
Yeah, because then she won't kiss you.
Exactly. I played a bunch more Path of Exile.
Okay.
You
were teaming up with our friend Chris.
I did. We made dudes together, and we played them twice, I guess. And I was all excited to get to level two. He was playing a melee character, which he doesn't normally do, and I was playing a ranged character, which I don't normally do. But I saw somebody when I was grouping up shooting some rad-ass lightning arrows, and I was like, I am going to do that. And then I got up to level 10 so I could do that.
Cool.
Does it
play kind of like a Diablo or a World of Warcraft? Like, what is its like the feeling of playing Path of Exile?
Oh, it's exactly like Diablo 2.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, like
click
a
click to move and click on things to hit.
Yeah, click to move, click to attack, hold shift to attack in place.
Okay.
The problem that was one of the big problems I had when I tried to play it was that I don't know if the hitboxes were smaller than they were in Diablo 2, because I don't remember having this problem in Diablo 2 of having a melee character that would try to attack somebody, but instead of attacking to it, I would click next to them, and so my character would run around the side of them instead of attacking. And if you do like the shift attack, you stand in one place, but because you're attacking something that's moving around, it quickly moves out of your range, and you're standing there swinging at nothing.
They'll move out of your range sometimes, and what is makes it difficult is that it's a lot of the time you are also missing.
Oh, wow.
Which doesn't give you any feedback. I found that so frustrating that I picked... I like dove through the talent tree of passive skills to the thing that's never miss, never crit, just so that that would stop happening. Because if you don't, you're missing like a third of the time.
Yeah.
But you also like if they're, I think if a monster is in a grid square and you start a swing at them and then they start moving from one grid square to another, you'll miss no matter what. Like if they're not there anymore, there's also a little bit of latency. I mean, I feel like they don't have quite as many dollars in servers.
Latency, that makes sense. As I could see how that
as
would be
Blizzard
thing.
Did for Diablo 2. Yeah.
Especially because I never played Diablo 2 online.
Oh, I only ever played it online.
Yeah.
You know, I started to read on the internet about builds because I was like, you know, I think I've sort of just fucked this character up. Like, I'm not really able to do the stuff that seems like it's designed to be level appropriate. Like, I'm just way too squishy. And I sort of was reading and I found a build that was very similar to what I had already done. Mm-hmm. And it was like, this build relies on this one particular skill. And so I like tracked down that. I participated in the player economy. No fucking idea if I got ripped off or not. But I was like, hey, does anybody have this skill gem? Yeah, I'll trade it to you for one chaos orb. And I was like, I have one of those. And I see people trading skill gems for those. But I don't know. I have no idea. I might have given him something that was worth 10 times what... Whatever.
So
it was
what is it
I wasn't
like
gonna do anything.
You drop your thing on the ground and he drops his thing on the ground?
No, there's an actual trade interface. I guess it used to be like that, but then they implemented an actual trade interface. We got some, there's an interesting idea brought up in one of the listeners' mails that I'm going to have to try and remember to read about this. But yeah, I don't know. I've gotten to the third act of the second difficulty. I want to get to the point where I can start playing with these maps and see how that works. But in order to do that, you have to beat the game on the highest difficulty. And I don't know, given how I've set my shit up, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. Like, all of the boss fights I've had to beat by going in with groups of players.
But that's viable, right? Like, that's a thing.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. I think that, you know, it makes the monsters stronger. I feel like you also, if you're playing with a group of four or five people and just plowing through dungeons, it is... You need a pretty good machine to handle all of the particle effects because even one dude generates a large number of particle effects depending on what attacks he's using. There are like support gems that you can socket up to your skill gems that make it like, so there's like lightning arrow that, you know, you shoot a dude and then lightning strikes him and then it arcs lightning to the three nearest enemies to him. And then you can put like a fork gem on that so that when you do it, it hits multiple people at the same time. Or you can do a chain gem on it, which works slightly differently. And I think it shoots, once it hits him, it shoots an arrow out of him and does it again.
Right.
But at a certain point, you know, you're generating thousands of individual little streaks of lightning every time you click, which you were doing 100 times a minute. And so, yeah, if you're in a group of a bunch of people with big flashy spells, it's fucking impossible to tell what's going on. But what you can just watch your experience bar crawling upwards because every time anybody knew you kills something, you're leveling up. So it's like,
that's cool.
It's a crazy easy way to level. You don't get a lot of gear that way. You're better off. This is actually kind of an interesting trade-off. You're better off farming a level that you don't really have to pay attention to and just picking up orbs and stuff and skill gems and stuff that drop because you'll get some valuable stuff. Like, at every level playing the game, you will get some valuable stuff to drop just randomly.
That's interesting.
And then you get your pick of it as opposed to just having to fucking dive for it.
Yeah.
It is nuts.
I did not miss that aspect.
So
of
it's
Diablo
like it's the
Diablo
same
3.
Kind of thing where everything just drops on the ground and everybody's just, it's just a click fest to see who gets it first?
So... It will drop things and assign them to a party member. there's a little timer on the nameplate of the item that says who it's for. It's obvious when it's yours because it's like emboldened and not, it's not grayed out. Mm-hmm. But that timer is, I think, either 2 seconds or 1.5 seconds.
Whoa.
Holy yeah. shit.
So it like might as well in this chaotic environment not even be there.
Dang.
And that's, yeah, I don't understand how they arrived at that. Like I think that the answer is going to be to make it configurable. Well, the answer, right? If they don't think this is a problem, then it's not a problem, right? Mm. Like, I'm not going to tell them, like, this would be better for me, so this is how you should do it. But
yeah, but I can see that.
I mean, I don't count on getting any loot when I'm playing in a group. I'm not going to get upset if something drops and somebody takes it, because that is the default that happens. If something drops for you and you don't get it right away within that window, then somebody else is going to get it, and it's my fault for being in a group. You know, this is a social problem. I'm not going to actually establish relationships with people in this game. I'm just going to join the random pickup groups, right? But that's my problem, not theirs. But yeah, it seems like a weird decision. Like, we are going to make it so this loot is assigned to you and nobody else can pick it up, but only for just barely not enough time for you to even notice.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I guess if you're being really vigilant, you get, even if you don't pick it up within that 2 second window, your brain has got a 2 second head start on anybody else who wants to click on it, but maybe that's not true.
No, because you can tell, like, where the
stuff drops.
So, like, you'll beat a boss and it will drop 2 or 3 golds and 30 blues and then a bunch of just random whites.
Wow, so you have 2 seconds to read all of the blues and pick the
ones
that
you want. You can tell because you see the timers moving on the things that are assigned to you.
Wow.
But you don't know what any of them are. They're all unidentified, right? So you can, this is a type of gear that is for my build, right? Like, this is, you know, so my guy is like, the skill tree is sort of mace centric, and there are 2 categories of maces. One that natively gives a boost to elemental damage, and one that natively gives a boost to stunning. So if you are doing a physical damage build, there's a certain kind of, you know, kind of mace that you're going to want. And if you're doing elemental mace damage like I am, then I want, you know, a crystal scepter or a lead scepter or a sekhem or whatever. And so you can increase your odds. Also, nobody's bothering to pick up the blues. That's the thing. Like, there are so many fucking items, like so many items drop, that if you wanted to, you could just join a group that's already cleared a level and just spend 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 trips to and from town.
Just picking up selling, all the stuff they
left
just
on picking
the
up the shit that they left on the ground and selling it. But you wouldn't do that because it's not worth it. Huh. You don't get enough stuff from selling it. Like, because there is no gold, that all whites have the same value, and they are 1/5 of an identify scroll. Except in certain cases where certain configurations of gem sockets result in you getting some other kind of orb out of it. And there are some weird rules that I don't understand that I could probably look up on a wiki if I needed to, but you know, I don't want to keep playing it, but I keep playing it. Like, I understand while I'm playing it, I'm not learning anything from this. This is not a valuable use of my time, but it's like going to Reddit. You know, like, this is what I am going to do instead of just staring at the ceiling. you know, this is one of those things that I just don't, this is not a good use of my time. Mm-hmm. I will play it while I'm listening to podcasts.
It's just, right? Like, what you're describing seems like maybe you're just having fun instead of it being edifying. Is that allowed?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I'm real. I see what you mean. I see how you've twisted my words there, but I can also do things that are fun and edifying, right? Like,
okay.
I have engineered my life so that the things that I enjoy are also things that improve my ability to do my job and, you know, do podcasts with dudes.
Right.
And, you know, when I recognize that I am not getting anything of any value out of I should maybe check out that Skinner box again. That was pretty cool. Like, I recommend that that is not a high level.
Maybe I'll get a piece of candy if I push that lever again.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, I recognize that as the lizard part of my brain telling me to go back and play this thing. And yeah.
I feel much the same about going mining in Minecraft or stand around to shear all my sheep until I've got 5 or 6 stacks of wool to trade in for emeralds or
I want to talk about this probably in relationship to the assignment, but I do want to talk about like exploration in games and whether it is intrinsically better to be exploring these built designed environments like they are in System Shock and the randomly created, just procedurally generated stuff in Minecraft, right? Because it tickles the same itch, but I feel less guilty about doing it in a designed environment than I do about the procedurally generated one.
So I think, in my mind, Minecraft is a better exploration experience than Diablo or Path of Exile, right? Because these two-dimensional sort of tiled, they're tiled even if you can't see the seams, even if you can't see the grout, they're still tiled. And there isn't ever any accidental majesty, and the accidental majesty is what makes Minecraft. Like, the ability, like, that if you walk far enough, you are going to see some super fucking cool-looking mountains, and you know what? I could spend the time and I could climb up that mountain and then I would be able to survey the environment and say, ah, there's a cool looking jungle over there. I'm going to go see that.
Yeah.
You know, and that, like,
so
I think the combination of the
temple off in the distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Or,
And the more environment types that Minecraft is able to generate, the more satisfying that's going to be, which is.
Yes and no, right? They took a step backwards when they first introduced biomes, like fucking with that algorithm, even in like relatively small ways, can have an impact on whether the environments are satisfying, right? Like,
you know, I agree with you from our perspective, but I think in a broader sense, it is better now than it was, right? We were pissed because when the biomes were introduced, our multiplayer server that we had fallen in love with because it was the first time we ever played Minecraft multiplayer and we were all building castles in the sky, it suddenly dumped us into a fucking ugly ass biome where all the grass looked dead.
Yeah. Right.
And we were just like, oh, man.
And the seams were crazy.
Fuck biomes. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, but that was because we had adapted an old map. I mean, it's almost as though we were playing a fucking alpha of a piece of software, right?
They also reduced the like what is now the extreme cliff biome or whatever, they reduced the standard hills and stuff like that to be much less severe, and so it became more natural in a way, but it was like so much less of the world was these really crazy just interesting chasms and
I think though, that that makes it better in general, right? Because if everything is majesty, nothing is majesty.
We could definitely get into an argument about it, but I had always felt I had felt like it was at a really good spot, and then they changed it, and it seemed less interesting, you know. And it's not that there isn't still cool stuff to find. It's just
I think for my money, there is somewhere a perfect mix of engineered environments and generated environments. So, if you could make a Minecraft world generator that generated an entire Skyrim, right? But it was yours, when this got made, you were the only person that was seeing this particular tomb with this particular contents near this particular mountain, so this is the only one that had, kobolds in it instead of skeletons, because it decided on world generation that the kobolds moved into this tomb. That to me is that is where it's at, right? That is the sort of magic future is, the MMO where everyone can have an impact on the world because the world does not have explicitly authored content in it.
I see.
right? Because of that, to get that kind of experience, right? Like, because the writing of what you're actually doing from moment to moment in a World of Warcraft is just fucking dreck, right? It's not, it's like, oh no, the X is overrun with Y. Like, it might as well be made with a template. So just make it with a template. So, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's what they did with, they've got those templated quests in Skyrim, and they were not as satisfying as the written quests, but they weren't garbage either.
Sure, right.
So,
but they also weren't the environment. They were just things to fill.
They had a list of dudes, and it was like, if dude alive, give quest to steal thing from dude, and then, oh wait, quick, put this thing in this dude's pocket. You know? it's like the guys with the blue suits and the wrenches running around just ahead of you to make sure you got some shit to do. But the exploring is not a thing in Path of Exile. It's like, I find myself approaching every level by hugging the right wall until I get to the exit and just killing the stuff that I have to kill if I'm trying to get through it. And it's not, I would feel like playing Minecraft was a much, much better use of my time than this. And I'm not entirely sure why that is, but to counteract this feeling of Path of Exile being a waste of my time, I thought, oh, you know what? I had decided that I was going to play Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning after it got cheaper. And I was like, I wonder if Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning is cheaper, and it's totally not on Steam. It's still $60 on Steam. And apparently that is because it is now owned by the state of Rhode Island, and the deal with Steam doesn't, like, for whatever reason, they can't make it cheaper, which seems weird to me, because I thought the deal was that Steam could do whatever the fuck they wanted with sales and stuff, but maybe there's something weird going on because of the whole legal imbroglio with 38 studios. But on Origin, it was $30. So I just bought it on Origin and played that for a couple hours last night. And a lot of the rough edges that I was bitching about in the demo that made me not want to pay... Like, the demo made me... It didn't make me not want to play the game. It just made me not want to pay $60 for it. And that's not an impulse that I usually have. So I don't know what to think about that. But, you know... It is just full on video game genre fiction, right? It's just like, oh, look at these trees. They're 100 times as tall as you, and there's fucking Todd McFarlane designed monsters running around. Shoot them with the bow. Wait, upgrade it. Shoot them with your bow of flames. It shoots flames. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to shoot these monsters with this Todd McFarlane flame bow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's like there's a bunch of quests. I feel like reviews that I've read said that a lot of the side quests are really just like, you know, go here, do this, nothing really to them, nothing that really supports any. But there are still some things. There are some things that I remember really liking about the demo. Just the like getting this skill that lets you detect hidden objects just turns a bunch of random stumps into treasure chests that are full of stuff.
Oh, that's
because it's
cool.
Like stump with shit hidden in it. And that is fucking great.
Yeah.
Like
that's really
clever.
And
they're like the more points you put into that like perception, the more informative your mini map is.
Oh, nice.
About stuff. And it's just like there's some just really neat things in it, and I don't really understand, like I don't understand why I had the bad attitude about it that I did. I think it was just sort of like a zeitgeist, like, ah, this thing sucks.
I mean, it was a game that was like retrofitted to be in that IP, right? Like that was a little weird.
I feel like that IP is sufficiently broad and wanky that it would not have required much retrofit.
I mean, it sounds like,
I mean, it's so, like
such a generic IP.
It is generic fantasy IP.
So,
but you know what?
But it was highly specific in its genericness, right? Like that.
I fucking like generic. I like generic.
You know, R.A. Salvatore was one of my favorite authors when I was growing up. Like, just, you know, his books are not great,
and
but the stories are so fucking compelling to me. You know.
And if I am not mistaken, R.A. Salvatore was the writer for Kingdoms of Amalur. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like,
I don't know if he was the writer for it, but he's the one who decided what stupid names the elves had and what stupid name the dwarves have and what stupid name is the Vikings. Like, Yeah. And the thing is, like, I don't care about... I wish that they were just... There's fucking elves, okay? They're the elves. But, like, what are you accomplishing by giving them some dumb fucking name with an apostrophe in it? Like,
what's the one in Skyrim for the dwarves? The Dwarmer.
Dwemer.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, I feel like in that case, at least, everybody calls them the dwarves. Everybody calls orcs, but they're actually Ordmer, right? Like, there was an old... It's like backstory. The weird, mm-hmm. the weird shit that you don't have to care about is irrelevant backstory.
Yeah.
To, you know, this is like why the races got split up. I mean, there's all that shit in World of Warcraft too, like the Titan computers and stuff.
Titans, like, and how the trolls are degenerate elves and whatever. Yeah.
And the Trogs were like a failed experiment in making dwarves.
Dwarves, yeah. Yeah.
That shit was. If you actually start thinking about what it is to play in the world of Warcraft, given the backstory that they have established, it gets pretty fucking weird. Like, you know, like, I see what you did there, but, like, we're all, this might as well not be there, right? Like, this might as well not be what the story is for all the difference that it makes in the day-to-day experience. Like, you, it's like, this is the new cool thing, like Infinity Blade, where you come up with the, like, sci-fi backstory for the fantasy. It's like, no, it's actually in the future. Whoa! Turns out we're all cyborgs.
I mean, you can't... Those games are so representational because, like, there is not enough land mass to support the number of people that are there just in terms of, like, food production, right? Like...
It's sort of like the Fallout New Vegas, where it's like, this is where the entire region gets its food from.
Yeah.
And there's like six corn plants. Yeah. I just took all the corn. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry. Hundreds of thousands of people that are going to starve as a result of my lapse in judgment.
Yeah. Like, that's because if you do things at the proper scale, it's just miles and miles of boring.
Yeah, it's fucking Lord of the Rings Online if you do things at the proper scale. It's like, oh, man. It turns out, you know, in the real world, delivering a pie is a real chore. Right? Like, for me to walk from anyone's house to anyone else's house that I know with a pie, I would really have to think about it. I would be like, what kind of cool hat are you going to give me in exchange for doing this? Because I'm not sure I want to. Like... You know, I could like deliver a pie over to Sean's house from the office, right? Because that would only be about a 15-minute walk. But I'm gonna need about a $12 hat, right? If I'm gonna do that.
Which
for
one
you.
Of your priceless family heirlooms are you going to give me, so that I can sell it straight back to you?
We gotta do. We should do Lord of the Rings Online as an assignment someday.
Hmm. Did they do a Mac client?
Probably not.
Oh, well.
Never mind.
Well, I mean, we still can. It's just not as convenient.
Yeah. We need to do that at a time. We got to do EverQuest as an assignment sometime, too, but we need to do it at a time when we don't have anything else to do, which is never, and when we can all agree, like, we are just going to do this for 2 hours a night.
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week.
The playing together thing is something that would be nice with those things. But then it's one of those, it's also like, you know, the same argument that I'm like, nobody would want to watch me do a Let's Play because I play like a spastic retard or something. Like,
well, you can do all that shit. You can try to walk through every intersection of two walls on your own time.
Sure.
Just don't, you know, or we, Riff and I come back the next day and you're on the giant golden horse and
Kevin, stop Kevining.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is a video game that gave you experience for trying to walk through walls, there's no way, because I would totally outlevel everybody.
I tried a stupid fucking iPhone game that I wish was not a free-to-play, timer-driven, microtransaction-based iPhone game, because it's like a Jurassic Park tycoon game. It's actually Jurassic Park licensed. And wow. I just wish to fuck there was a version of it that I could pay $5 for and then just play a fucking Kairosoft game.
So it's like...
But there's not. It's like The Simpsons Tapped Out. It's like, I've got... You come back in Triceratops. 5 hours. Come back... No, it's fucking 15 minutes. To maximize it, you get... Yeah. 15 minutes. And I'm just... I don't know. Like, I need to just delete it. Because it's garbage. And I knew it was garbage. When I saw that it was free, I knew that it was garbage.
Did we lose Kevin? I don't hear him hissing in my ears.
No, I'm still
oh,
here.
There you are. Oh,
sorry.
Your connection got better then.
The moon phase shifted and Kevin is no longer a were-snake. Anyway. What's in the news, Kevin?
Well, THQ is finally auctioning off the remainder of its IP assets and whatnot, which includes Darksiders and all their licensed stuff, like the Costume Quest thing and everything. So they're doing, like, I think 6 different blocks. So, like, all their licensed stuff is in one block. And Darksiders Darksiders and Darksiders 2 is in its own sort of miniature block, but everything else is in, like, big chunks. So I'm curious how that's going to...
I hope Double Fine gets their shit back.
We should bid on the Darksiders license and then just make a like a turn based microtransaction browser game, Darksiders. I'm no longer describing KOL as a macrotransaction game. There are no microtransactions.
Okay.
You can't get anything for less than $10.
True.
Because we are ethical. I'm serious.
I don't know that Double Fine can just off the bat, because from what I read, it looked like all of their licensed IP stuff was going to be sold as a chunk to the highest bidder, and then it will be up to them whether they want to, up to the buyer to see whether they want to split it up or whatnot.
It's actually going to be bought by some crazy spinster who will then just distribute all the licenses among her cats.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. And then I don't have much else in the news front. I feel like this was a slow week compared to last week's sort of big PS4 story town. But this is there are a couple more just sort of like rumor type things. Square Enix trademarked Deus Ex Human Defiance today. So that might mean that they're going to do a sequel or a prequel or something, or it might mean nothing else. Like, it might mean nothing at all. Like,
it might just be a really late game Facebook tie-in.
Yeah. I mean, it could be a Wii port. It could be any number of things.
We'll have a Wii port.
Have a nip of mulled wine.
And also in the sort of more rumors or scuttlebutt than anything else, Ubisoft has said again that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to come out at some point.
We're still totally working on this, guys.
Yeah, I mean, they announced that it would be a game on the PS3 in 2008, so it's been a long time.
It would be funny if that guy was just like, you know what? Fuck you. Rayman is awesome. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is like Pokemon Snap, except with the Rabbids from Rayman. And that's it.
But they said that the next time they talk about it, there should be something really interesting to say. So it's possible that they are going to announce it sometime later this year as a real thing. So maybe it'll be a PS4 game, you know. For all we know,
that's sort of the press conference version of My Other Car is a whatever. Like, the next time we talk, it will be interesting.
That's why I hesitated to even bring it up, because it's like kind of non-news, but I'm super excited about the idea of it coming out. So hopefully that will happen.
Because you dutifully finish the assignments.
Yes.
Speaking of which, the assignment, System Shock 2 continued. Man, Riff, you gave up early.
Yeah. Wait,
you gave up again, Riff?
I got to the cargo holds.
Okay.
And was just not having any fun. And was like, all right, I'll watched the Let's Play of this, which I actually had to skip through the Let's Play to finish watching the Let's Play in time, because it's friggin' long.
But, yeah, it is really long.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not at all into horror games as a general rule. Like, I think I've mentioned before that the only two scary games I've ever finished were Silent Hill 2 and 3.
You didn't finish this is a horror game?
You didn't finish Amnesia?
Nope.
Oh.
So you should go back and finish Amnesia.
Yeah, the ending is really cool and totally tonally in line with the rest of the game.
So you add like horror game to respawning enemies, which I don't like in any sort of game, and then it's a game with a lot of backtracking.
World of Warcraft is your very least favorite game of all.
I would prefer World of Warcraft if the enemies didn't respawn.
But no, you wouldn't. You would have zero experience points if somebody else went and killed the enemies.
But so
well, I guess you get experience points by picking herbs.
So respawning enemies and backtracking in a horror game is just nerve-wracking to me. And then you also have extremely scarce resources, a very slow and awkward melee attack, and even the weakest, like, first monsters you run into do a ton of damage if they get a hit on you. And so it was just the most harrowing game experience. And I recognize that it's a good game. I understand why a lot of people love it. It's not the game for me.
I think that I would not have gotten, even so far. I'm on the
deck four.
Yeah, I'm 2/3 of the way through the three things you got to do on deck four.
Okay.
And I would feel like I had missed out if I did not get to experience the Shodan reveal firsthand, because that was fucking rad. It came out of nowhere and it was fucking rad. And the fact that all of her dialogue with you for the remainder of it is that just crazy fucked up, like,
that's
let's just
cool.
turn
yeah.
on every
yeah.
Pro Tools effect every, at the yeah. same time.
Like, so you are an excellent example of a pitiful species. And yeah, that was cool. I was already aware of the reveal. I had, like, seen.
Oh no, I knew that. I knew that.
Well, what I'm wondering is if I hadn't been aware, how obvious do you think it is if you didn't already know?
I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, I knew that Shodan was the cool thing about System Shock 2, and so as the doctor's dialogue got, like, more and more sort of impatient and sinister, I was like, you know, this has got
to
be.
And as they're starting to refer to Shodan being on the ship and
gotta
stuff.
Got to be. Yeah.
Did either of you make it to the very last level?
Don't spoil anything for me. I currently am in the area around the Rickenbacker or whatever.
Okay. The last two levels are very thematically different and from each other and the rest of the game, and they're both very cool.
You go to this sort of border realm called Zen, and you fight a giant space baby.
I am in something that is very thematically different than everything up to this point.
Yeah.
And the difficulty has ramped up tremendously.
Yeah, crazy. I found that to be true on deck four. Like, starting to run into those fucking spiders that are just, like, this enemy is 20 times as hard to defeat as all of the other enemies
that I've been exposed to.
Man,
the Let's Play I was watching, the guy got into a situation where he was having to fight one of those spiders, like, at close range with a shotgun, and he put fucking 10 shotgun shells into that thing before it died.
And, like, they keep being, like, these plot beats where it's like, oh, you've just put this key in this lock, huh? 5 spiders!
Yeah.
Cool, like, thanks, game. Like, that's, like,
when they just dump a bunch of spiders on you, it is just the worst.
I had gotten my agility most of the way up at that point, and so it was like, well, I can just run backwards in a circle fast enough that none of the spiders hit me, but that just led to me depleting the energy of every energy weapon that I had, and then the ammo of every non-broken weapon that I had until they broke. Like,
that sucks.
Yeah, and it's like, all right, well, I guess it's just a lot of quick save, lightsaber, quick save, lightsaber, quick save, lightsaber. Like, Yeah, that was a mess. I am falling out of love with some of the gameplay elements as a result of that increase in difficulty, even on fucking easy. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I guess that I... See, part of the problem is that I am entirely ignoring the Psy stuff, which means that I'm able to do a lot of the things that I am interested in doing, like get high stats. I'm interested in having high stats. That's one of my turn-ons. But yeah, it seems like maybe there's some Psy powers that shore up some weaknesses that you might have against, say, psychic death spiders.
Later on, the same spiders exist, but they're basically invisible.
Oh, great!
They're like almost completely transparent. It's pretty great. Yeah. But, you know, I have been playing it very methodically and carefully and collecting every object that's out there and fighting everything with melee unless I absolutely can't. And like,
did you get the basketball?
The basketball.
Apparently they're on like the first level, like when you're doing still doing like character creation. Somewhere there's hidden a basketball that if you can get it all the way to the recreation deck and shoot a hoop with it, there's an Easter egg.
Really?
Yeah.
Because on the first levels, it's nothing that you interact with. I thought nothing that you interacted with stayed with you, but I guess that may not be true. Oh, that's cool. I had no idea. No, I did not know that there was a basketball that I could take with me and keep in the long run. That's
Did you get the gnome?
I did not.
Did you get
very similar sort of thing?
The radio.
Yeah.
I did not get any of those things. That's great. I saw the basketball hoop, and I was like, you know, it'd be funny if I jumped through there if there was something funny that would happen or whatever. But actually getting a basketball there, I didn't even think about that. That's awesome. I had been just holding most of my like cyber upgrade experience points or whatever in reserve and have started spending them more and more as I get later in the game, as I find like the cooler stuff. Like I got the high tier heavy weapon, which is like a crazy fusion cannon. I put 6 points in energy in heavy weapons and I've been using that. That thing.
Wow, you have to have energy and heavy weapons?
No, I have energy weapons because that's what I had it. That's what
I maxed out energy weapons when I found that EMP cannon, which
doesn't do anything.
Not be all that good.
Yeah, like because it doesn't do much. Like I got energy to 4 so I could get the laser pistol, which is great because that with the double modification and then a high maintenance is awesome. You can kill a bunch of stuff and you have a lot of reserve power.
You know what kind of bugs me about the overall design of this game is that you can recharge your gun.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of that recharge is walking back to where there is a recharge station.
Mm-hmm. Unless
which
you
it seems like
have
you can
a
always
battery.
Do. Well, unless you have a battery, but you wouldn't do that, right?
There's also a psychic skill that like, charges shit.
I always feel like I am fucking myself by using the healing items because it would be better. It would be more expeditious for me to walk back to one of the places where I've activated a med table because it's like you can either get this real expensive, precious, limited commodity heal or you could get one for basically fucking nothing by just walking a long way.
Right. So, you know? I mean, and I have been primarily walking, but then I have all these resources at my disposal for the times when I'm in a tight spot or really far away from stuff, and it's just not worth it to walk back. Like it becomes a value judgment on where you want to do it. And
I guess I wouldn't feel like this if the places where the recharge stations and the medical desks were was a town and the places where I was fighting monsters were a cave, right? Right. I wouldn't feel weird about having to make a trip back to town to do it. But it's not
true.
A lot of the places where there are those, you know, upgrade stations and replicators, there are also monsters that randomly spawn there.
Yep.
And like the fact that, you know, the game doesn't pause when you go into one of those is, you know, I remember people making fun of BioShock because you could just, like, leap into midair and then just freeze and hover there with time frozen while you hacked a turret by playing Pipe Dream on it. But, like, that was, I think, a response to the obnoxious shit that happens to you while you're stuck in interface screens in this game, and how,
I mean,
that, while that adds some tension...
Trying
it's
to hack
not...
a turret before it rotates around and shoots you is kind of cool, right? Like, I can see it both ways.
I mean, like, and again, this is me doing a thing that I hate, which is, I consider it just playing the box the game came in instead of playing the game. But, like, hacking has 100% success rate because it's fucking quick load if you fail. And sure. I wish that it wasn't. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I am currently, like, right before we got on the show, I'm trying to open a box, and because I only got my hacking skill to 3, I have an 85% failure rate on this hacking thing, and even with quick saving, it's not, I've spent like 10 minutes trying to open this thing, and I haven't been able to open it, right? Like,
whereas you just wouldn't, if without quicksave, you wouldn't have bothered, right? It would have been, oh, well, because I did not spend points in hacking, I just can't have what's in this box.
Maybe.
That would kind of drive me crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would, but because that drives you crazy, your preferred play style involves putting points in
this
hacking.
This is true.
Right? I mean, it is not a meaningful trade-off if you get everything, right? You're not...
Yeah, I mean, when I play a game, I want to play it to see everything that I can, right? So, like, I was almost tempted to get my hacking all the way up to 6, but then I realized that I could just get it up to 3, so I could open up all the crates, and then there's only 3 crates that I've found so far that require a hacking of 6, and you can just use those, like, one-off hack for me devices to open those. Which I think is a pretty clever, like, having objects in the world that let you modify anything for free or hack anything for free or repair anything for free, like, that prevents you from getting...
They're really rare, though, aren't they?
They're pretty rare, yeah.
And they don't work if you don't have the skill. Right?
Huh.
And is
that true? Like, because I've...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not you have trying to, have, to repair anything without that. But.
You have to have some level of repair to do it. And I don't know if it's... You just have to have not a non-zero level or what. But that was what I was sort of lamenting last week. There is a joke about that in one of the items. The automatic maintenance tools was... There's, like, a quote from some dude saying, yeah, this isn't the kind of bullshit that'll let any untrained clown... do a man's work or something. And right. I wonder if that's like a joke about an argument in development about whether it should work regardless of you having the skill or not. Hmm. Because it was like, yeah, I don't know.
I like the way that they balance the skill prices where getting that first point is kind of expensive, then it gets cheap again for a while, and then it gets really expensive to get to max
it out. It makes your choices in the character creation meaningful.
Yeah.
Well, or... So that's one way of looking at it, or it makes many of the choices really clearly the wrong choice to make, right? You want to just be sure and take the choices that give you one level in the maximum number of things.
Mm. I mean, I did when I first started playing, I went through and did every possible combination of things to see what gives you the most points, like the highest point value of starting stuff, and like the Marines and the Navy are pretty close to each other, like point wise it's like 46 to 49, and the OSA is more like 58 to 59 because the Psy levels are somewhat expensive, but you that's including spending some points on stuff that you aren't necessarily ever going to use, like, you know, I don't know if you're ever going to use like a plus agility or whatever.
Agility, like the extent to which higher agility makes you move faster is very, very satisfying.
I like that. I like that strength actually increases, gives you more inventory slots. That's pretty, like, that. That's a really satisfying way for it to give you. I'm surprised that, like, you're increasing your endurance only gives you 5 hit points. That seems like a super low reward for a stat point. Like,
doesn't it also increase your like toxic and radiation?
It does, but those are so relatively rare that it doesn't seem like a big deal to have radiation.
Oh, is it? I feel like it started happening all the time.
There's a period where it's like the primary like obstacle, but then it ceases to be a big deal. It's like very spotty after that point. At least, you know, I haven't gotten to the end of the game yet.
I keep getting poisoned and biohazarded.
Poisoning, you definitely can have... That happens a lot more often, but...
Fucking spiders, man.
The spiders... So something about the spiders that, like... Besides the fact that they jump and they jump behind you, which is freaky as hell, when they attack, they stop moving. And if you're using a lightsaber, your attack range is further than theirs, so you can get to a sweet spot where they're in their like attack animation, but they're not hitting you, and you can wail on them two or three times.
I feel like I've only fought them in such dark environments that it's very difficult for me to tell when they are animating meaningfully.
I feel like attack animations, watching your enemies' attack animations is a hugely important aspect of like learning how to fight them, because if you can react to a lot of them to like actually gain advantages in combat, which is pretty satisfying when you figure that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten to the point where if I'm careful, I can kill monkeys without getting hurt, and I can kill those worms without getting hurt.
Yeah.
But you know what kind of bothers me about Deck 4 is that, like, why are there fucking ninjas? Like, you know, it was like everything was like scary, and it's okay for the plot important ones to be ninjas because they're like things that some dipshit hacker built,
right?
So he's gonna make them like a ninja. But why are the aliens making ninjas?
I mean, why are the aliens making cyborgs, right? When they're all about being flesh, right? Like that's a little weird, too.
Hmm. Yeah.
Why are there spiders? Why couldn't it have been like a spider whose body was a baby or something?
Spiders are scary.
Like there's things in a Dead Space.
I never saw that.
There's a type of enemy that's super cool.
I didn't play it. I just saw it.
There's a type of enemy that's super cool that I've only ever seen one of that is really really hard to fight and stuff. And so I don't know if that was
Is it the big mouth monster thing?
Why can't everything be those Simish fat dude pregnant woman combo flesh spiders from that awesome sewer level of Vampire the Masquerade?
Have you encountered the rumbler guys yet, Zach?
No.
They're like giant sort of hulking monsters. They hit really hard. Their model is really cool. Were also humans, so they have like a face, but it's over like on the side of their head.
Oh, you know what? They show those in a hologram during the showdown.
Yeah, I just the way their mouths go up the side like that. They're pretty cool.
They are. They're cool.
So the only note that I took this time was I found myself pretty frustrated by the number of empty containers that littered the environment in this game. And I wanted to chat with you guys about whether you think that that's annoying or not. And
I wonder if, I mean, is it possible that those
Failing item drop rolls, and so the...
Well, I was going to say more like difficulty level.
Oh. Huh.
Because I believe...
At easy, right? Or are you saying at the hard level? If he's at the hard level, there would be more stuff?
Well, that might also be true. I think the way... I don't have any evidence of this, but it seemed like they did that sort of thing in Dead Space, where the difficulty level affected how many containers were unlocked. And every unlocked container had a thing in it.
I mean, like, so like the way that Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas handle it, right? I think that those containers don't necessarily contain a specific thing until you open it, right? Because you can get those things that you find more ammo in containers, you find more bottle caps in containers, and maybe there's some of that in this. I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure that everything is, all the containers are set. I think they are designed, and I don't have a lot of evidence to back this up, but they're not like monster drops, which change every time you kill the monster.
So like you get into that bunk room and there are like 30 foot lockers, yeah. one of which has something in it. And it's like, what? Come on, man. Why did you make me do that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like they could have at least put some chips or vodka or something.
You're searching for something, right? Like it's because somebody will like open the first two or three and be like, I guess these are all empty, and then not find the stuff that's in the last one, right? Like,
I don't think that person is real.
Like, at the very least, that person does not play video games.
Well, I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. Like, it's that is part of the like the aspect of searching something like that, like checking the environment, right? Like, you probably don't do it the same way, where like I look in every corner, every dark corner, and I like run my mouse over everything just to make sure I'm not missing something that was on the ground or whatever, right? Like,
I was knocking down all the ventilation ducts I saw for a long time,
huh?
Just in case there was something hidden on top of them.
Yeah,
I like in Fallout 3 how it'll just say this container is empty, and then you always fucking click the button anyway, even though it said it was empty. But like, you know, before it opens, like, I can just close this.
Yeah. So you can just skint down a hallway of lockers and stop at the one that has something in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and I still feel like I'm searching for stuff because I found the fucking room. You know, like it's
sure. No, I mean, I'm not saying that like it couldn't be better than having to actually sit there and open every one, but like.
If we were making a game about exploring an environment, would you guys push for putting a bunch of empty containers?
Well, think about it this way. I would put a bunch of containers
with junk in them.
Okay. I didn't even think of this necessarily as like a horror game, really. But I guess in that sense, like you need moments where you are doing something so that things can like sneak up behind you, right? And searching through a bunch of stuff. I agree with Riff. That's probably fair. That like these places should they should just be a bunch of like clothes or whatever that you could dump in a recycler to get nanites out or something. Like, but like having them be empty is just another way of like just having activities for you to do while things sneak up and
scare. I guess it feels to me like a waste of my time. To go into this room, and even it doesn't feel like a waste of my time to say, oh, this is where they kept their crate of cigarettes, you know, right. But this is where they kept their crates of nothing. This is where they kept their 40 fucking empty lockers, right? Like, wow, these guys were really ascetic.
To be fair, they did not make every container in those cargo holds checkable, because that would have been insane, right? Like, they definitely reined that in some places, but yeah, that's a tough line. I can see how they got to where they got, and I could definitely see going several different directions with it. What did you guys think about the level design? Like, having I played System Shock 1 like immediately before this, and it's the level design in that game was similarly sprawling. They had a bunch of hidden, like in the first game, there's a bunch of like secret passages and hidden doors and stuff like that where you have to sort of really scour, and there's almost none of that in System Shock 2. But in System Shock 2, the level design is friendly in the way that it, like, you'll go out, explore something, and then you'll usually end up, or you'll have to backtrack, but you'll be done with a branch, and you'll come back to sort of a central hub. Like, that first little medical area that you start out in is right next to the elevator, which is also right next to the shaft that you have to, when the elevator is broken, is right next to the shaft that goes down to engineering. And the elevator tends to be like pretty centrally located until you get to the military ship, and then it's
The guy doing the Let's Play I watched used that elevator as like his mobile dump all my crap in this room.
Yeah.
Does the elevator actually keep, like, if you, is it the same room if you drop something in the elevator?
Yeah. Oh,
that's interesting. Huh. I have way, way, way too much stuff stockpiled to fit in that elevator.
Yeah, I kind of wish that I had every time I found a chemical storeroom, emptied my inventory, picked up all the chemicals, taken them to one place that was like right near the elevator. Because that it's just like every time I find something to research and it's like, oh, God damn it. I don't want to, you know, and I guess the reason that you get those data disks that are the chemical manifests so is so that you know which one to go back to. But like, I don't remember which
one. It's almost always chemicals on that level when you find it. It's almost always in
the so you have to have like vanadium to research the toxin A, and the only one of those I ever found was in somebody's desk on that level. Like that was part of the
that's
puzzle.
A plot. Yeah, that's a part of the puzzle. The puzzle.
Puzzle. I mean that desk is.
I've also never found any sodium, and I'm stuck with all the shit in my inventory that requires sodium to research.
Yeah, that's either I think that comes up on deck 5 or 6. Is the sodium.
Which is what is that crystal shard?
That is just another melee weapon.
When I found it, she talked about it like it was something important.
Yeah, you end up getting like I've been collecting basically everything that I can find. Like I've got a stockpile of like 12 of them.
Potted plants.
Potted plants. I've got a giant room filled with potted plants.
It's baked beans and What was your?
Oh my I have my current playthrough. I have the bed entirely loaded with teddy bears, and the kitchen sink is full of switchblade knives.
Okay,
but the previous playthrough, I also had the entire spare room was filled with bottles of whiskey and deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs. Okay.
Yes, I just that was for the dog.
The heart shaped bed. I got the like romantic theme for the Megaton house, and then just offloaded all of my death claw hands one at a time onto the bed. Big heart shaped bed.
In Skyrim, I found a house that had a wooden bin, like right in a zone of sunlight. So I loaded it up with every gem I found, and it was beautiful.
Why are ladders such a pain in the ass in video games?
It seems like there are some tricks that people learned along about Half-Life 2 that just made it so ladders from that point forward were really intuitive to use. And prior to that, you know, it's a tricky problem.
Yeah, you know, it seems like it took a long time for it to be solved. Yeah. I mean, I guess the controls not being standardized for a decade, two decades.
I mean, this game came out, 5 years after Doom? You know, I mean, it wasn't...
Yeah, it was 99, and and the Marathon series is, 94, 95, 96, so the evil, malevolent AI that you're forced to work with to defeat the alien hordes is yet another thing that the Marathon series did first.
It's very cyberpunk as a theme. Yeah.
There was no cyberspace, or at least there hasn't been any yet. Like, that was an interesting...
They missed the primary item on their to-do list.
I'm just surprised, given how that was, a significant subsection of the first game, actually going into cyberspace to do stuff. And, it was a little hokey in the first game, but it was interesting. It was a totally separate little mini-game, and... I'm just surprised that they excised it entirely in favor of the little puzzle hacking mini game stuff. I don't know. I was looking forward to having a hacker that went into things and defeated virtual ice monsters or whatever, you know.
Well, maybe we'll get some of that in Shadowrun.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, that's a pretty good game. So I think next, because Kevin and I are both going to be traveling, we're going to do something that we can play fairly quickly. So we've been holding on to Adventure for the Atari 2600 for the next assignment.
Cool.
So nobody has any excuse to not play that. It is 4 kilobytes. Yeah. You can get the ROM. It is 4 kilobytes, and
I think you can even get it as an iPad app. Oh, yeah. There's an Atari Greatest Hits app or something.
Oh, or you could also just play Arranger, the modern-day homage to it that is also the last thing I played that made me yell fuck a lot and my girlfriend to say, calm down. Calm down, crazy rage man. Adventure for the Atari 2600. Hey guys, you want to do some listeners' mail?
Sure. It's been ages.
Our chicken writes, if you could time travel some famous person from the past into the present to play a video game with him or her, who would you pick and what would you play? Riff?
Well, I could play Jet Moto with Jim Morrison.
I could play Jetpack Joyride with Janis Joplin.
What about Wii Sports with William Shakespeare?
Or Star Control with Samuel Clemens?
Assassin's Creed with Aleister Crowley?
Psychonauts with Plato?
Pac-Man with Paul McCartney?
Solomon's Key with Sam Kinison?
Dragon Age with Douglas Adams?
I think I'd play Joust with Jesus.
I'd play Asteroids with Aristotle.
Guild Wars with George Washington.
Final Fantasy with Farrah Fawcett.
I would play Gears of War with George Washington. That was poorly planned.
Tomb Raider with Tim Robbins.
Dungeon Master with Dudley Moore.
Fantasy Star with Phil Spector.
Gauntlet with Geronimo.
Metal Gear with Mahatma Gandhi.
Wing Commander 4 with W.C. Fields.
StarCraft or Skyrim with Socrates.
And I'd play Cooking Mama with Charlie Manson.
I would play Halo with Homer.
Street Fighter with Stephen Fry.
That's all I've got.
God, Riff doesn't know how to count either. That's all right. While Riff is busy not knowing how to count, I'll just play Hydro Thunder with Harriet Tubman.
What about Ultima 3 with Uma Thurman?
These are all good ideas, guys. Okay, next listener's mail question.
Wait, so like, you know, I kind of want to do that again and not do it in a round robin because that sounded awful. But
no, it didn't. I think it was great.
You can shuffle it in editing.
Yeah, we'll fix it. I'll fix it in post, Kevin. Don't worry. Fred Levi says, no, we read this one already. Little Crow says, so how's about some props and love for Watch Out for Fireballs, especially since Zach has guested on at least one of their shows, and how did that come about? Yeah, you know, that show is great.
Yep. And they keep shouting out to us. I think I mentioned that last week.
Yep.
I randomly heard an old episode of theirs where they said some nice things about us.
No, they're good dudes. They're very good dudes. Kevin and I had some drinks with Cole when we were in Columbus last time. And, I don't know. I ended up on the Dark Souls podcast because I had been talking to... Cole emailed us and asked if any of us played because they were just trying to put together a guest lineup when Bonfireside Chat was still in the planning stages. And I was like, you know what? I will start playing this game so that I can be on your podcast. If you want. So then I kept having to text him in the middle of the night when I would get stuck somewhere.
They're super serious about playing the games, too. I couldn't believe they both got all the way through Final Fantasy VI in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that is... Wow. They have a level of determination and free time to dedicate to their assignments that we do not ever pull off.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
And it's... I don't know, man. Being on that show and then being on the Ludology show, like... there's people who have like these, and I guess we have this, too. And I like to think that we don't because I ignore it and Kevin gets mad at me. But, like... They're just like outlines, and that's how they sound like they know what they're talking about all the time. It's because they do, because they thought about this instead of just getting drunk before they came to do the recordings.
I like having an outline to fall back on in case of things not working out all that well, but I would rather just be freeform. Like, there have been times when... You've been annoyed at me for talking about just random stuff because people don't want to hear that shit. And I would argue that there is a subset of our audience that loves it when we talk about random shit. Mm-hmm. So.
Little Crow says, an Insurgent Simulator, the replacement heart is in the white box on the right. You probably smashed it off the table while grabbing the bone saw.
That's pretty good.
The Sporkinator writes, you recently mentioned a dexterity game hidden in all of your grandmother's closets, Shoot the Moon. Do you often play non-video dexterity games? Do you have a favorite? I don't know that I...
Dexterity games.
Yeah, you know what I actually enjoy a lot if I am ever at a house where a little kid has it is that Bop It game. Huh.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Crazy-ass, most recent version of that where there's like 12 different... Whoa. Verbs.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's out of control.
An old friend of mine gave me for Christmas one of those spheres with the plastic mazes inside with the marble that you try and get around it. it is still at my parents' house because shipping it was more worth would have cost more than it was worth.
Somebody,
but it's a neat thing.
Somebody got Emily one of those. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like this. It's got all these little checkpoints so that you can just roll the ball back to once you've gotten it to this stage, you can restart the ball in that stage. Yeah, that thing is nuts.
They're pretty cool.
A lot of the time, stuff like that is so cheaply made, though, that you can't tell, is this hard or is it just broken, you know? And,
The ones, the name brand ones that I've encountered have been good in that regard.
I used to play, a metal, a ball bearing in a labyrinth type game that was pretty well constructed. It was, two axes of balance that you were adjusting to try to get the thing to roll around correctly.
Labyrinth or something, I think those were called. Are classic. Yeah. There's some good implementations of those for iPad.
Right. It was extra tricky. Well, it wasn't extra tricky, but it was it had little holes that the ball would fall into, and depending on which, you could sort of track your progress, or you could give yourself a score by seeing how what stage of the thing, there were 100 holes or whatever, and the goal is to try to get to the 100th one, which is neat. That's a thing where you can practice and get better at it and have an actual number that tells you your progress.
I also have that. I mean, well, okay, that's not a dexterity thing. I have that offset mirrored Rubik's Cube. I actually sat down and solved that the other day.
It's a mental dexterity game.
Yeah. Mental dexterity.
Yeah. I've never... Once I learned that in order to solve a Rubik's Cube, you just have to start memorizing
the algorithms.
I'm not interested in that. I just don't.
I have that webpage bookmarked.
You don't have to. That's not...
No, I mean...
I've never memorized it.
You don't... have to. You can be one of those guys who owns a Rubik's Cube and has been working on solving it for 30 years.
Sure, that's true.
Yeah, that's me. You take the stickers off. That's how you solve it.
Nah, screwdriver.
Okay.
Stickers don't
You just drink
on,
a screwdriver, right? And then you no longer care that you can't solve a Rubik's Cube. Well, I'm stupid, but at least I'm happy. Well, I'm stupid, but at least I'm drunk. Man, speaking of which, I only have two more days. 48 hours from now, I am, with any luck, going to be unconscious. That's probably
gonna
bad.
I'm going to go to that aviary place again tomorrow, I think, to get Melissa there.
You're going
to
get some fancy science cocktails?
I think I am.
You'll have to tell us about them.
They have dry ice in them.
They have all kinds of crazy shit. Yeah. Did we not talk about this on a video games hot dog before?
I don't know.
The thing where they give you this one cocktail that the entire cocktail is inside a sphere of ice, and they give you a little like a rubber band with a ball bearing on it that you slingshot down to break the sphere, thus distributing the cocktail and the shattered pieces of the ice into the glass for you
to
drink it.
That's awesome.
There's another one that comes in a giant inflated bag filled with jasmine mist.
Yeah.
There are some that there's a Bunsen burner that they serve it with a Bunsen burner that is doing not a distillation but sort of percolating a drink through an infusion, and you let that run for a while and then drink it.
Wow.
Yep. It's some, pretty nuts.
It's some crazy shit. You would like it if you drank. Although you would probably go and have some drinks.
Yeah.
You go and have some.
I don't
all,
not
They're
drink,
all fucking
just,
crazy
yeah.
ass. You're not as enthusiastic a drinker as as even Kevin, who is himself not as enthusiastic a drinker as me. You guys, I think, just have way fewer sinister voices in your head that can only be quieted with glorious, glorious ethanol.
That is true.
Or methanol, I guess, but then that also makes it so I can't see anything anymore, so I probably don't. Bye. Fucking, I read a book about alcohol and caffeine, and the reason that methanol makes you go blind is because there is some particular thing that, after it gets attacked by the alcohol dehydrogenase enzyme in your stomach, instead of turning into just something else that your body knows how to deal with, it turns into something that finds its way to your eyes and turns into formaldehyde.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Yep. because it's something like you have alcohol dehydrogenase enzyme that turns the alcohol into acetaldehyde, and then that is the thing that Japanese people often can't. They often don't have the enzyme to get rid of, and so they get like flushed and extra drunk, and feel sick or whatever. But then they just drink anyway because it's awesome. That's the only way to make themselves feel better about Pearl Harbor. But with methanol with shitty, like if you're just drinking wood alcohol, you go blind because it turns into formaldehyde and pickles your eyes.
Ugh, that's terrible.
So great. You should read this book. The half of it that's about alcohol is way more interesting than the half that's about caffeine. But it's called, I think, Buzz. I read an entire book on the Kindle app.
Wow.
Which I never do.
I just discovered when my count was off. I accidentally skipped one.
Oh, which one?
I'd play Mega Man X with Malcolm X.
Okay. Saul Vomnus says, so in a recent episode, there was some talk about caves. Have any of y'all ever played Colossal Cave Adventure? Yeah, I played Colossal Cave Adventure. Everybody has some copy of that on a DOS.
Yeah.
There were a lot of elements of that in
Zork?
A game that I had, in Zork, but also in this game that I had for the TRS-80 Color Computer 2, which I think I tracked down and it was called Pyramid 2000. I had a few very crude text adventures on cassette that my dad's buddy who sold him the computer had gotten. One of them was called Rakatu, RAAKA-TU, which is it's about like going to this temple in the jungle. Which I, many years later, ported to Inform and then never did anything with it.
Huh.
Because I was waiting. I found out that the guy who made it was still alive and accessible via email, and I was like, I need to ask that guy permission to release this, and then I just never did. And so I was like, oh well, at least I learned Inform. That I don't remember anything about.
Yeah, did you use Inform to do anything else?
I mean, I started making a game that was just, you know, like, oh, you woke up, you're super hungover, this sucks. Like, every single game.
Inform 6 or Inform 7?
I think it was Inform 5
wow.
At that point. Yeah. I played, I remember getting a 5 1/4 inch floppy in high school that had the actual original, not the original, because like Crowther and Woods did not work on the game together, right? It was like one guy made the game and then another guy added a bunch of stuff to it that actually made it, it sort of added the fantasy setting to it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't really have any interest in going to find that cave. Those particular things, like all of those things are real locations in the Bedquilt Cave or whatever that thing is called.
Yeah.
But
It might be interesting. I don't know. I like the idea of actually going and exploring a thing that would be cool to explore. I'm not sure how many of those things are left in the world that are not already thoroughly explored and littered upon.
There are millions of them around every corner. I mean, when we were cavemen, you think there was only like 5 dudes? There was like one dude down in Tucson. Like, and his family lived in Karchner Caverns. Caves everywhere, man. Caves everywhere. Kevin, didn't you go to Karchner Caverns with your dad?
I did.
Was it cool?
It was okay. It was, I guess I had hoped to see something super awesome, and it was like a big cave, and it's still a living cave, which is pretty unusual because most of the time when you go to caves, it's there dry and no longer changing. This one was discovered and sort of sealed up quick enough where they have actual like airtight seals on the doors and stuff like that so that it doesn't lose all of its moisture and just dry out immediately. But it's like all the cool stuff, like they never let you go to the like crazy cool parts of the caves where you'd probably just ruin them, right? With all the crazy crystals and stuff like that. Like, I want to go to that cave in, was it like Mexico, where it's just these giant crystals and stuff
You can't. You will never be able to go there again.
It's flooded, right?
Like, yeah, because they found it. It was underwater when they found it, and they pumped all the water out, and it was like, it's like 150 degrees in there or something too. It was like super unpleasant to be in there. And they like took all the pictures they were going to for a couple months, and then they were just like, "Oh, we got to turn this shit off." And so now it's all just underwater again.
Hmm. Yeah,
that's like that's the kind of crazy cave that I'd like to see.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'd say that I would like that, but I would fucking hate every second of it if I had to wear some fucking air-conditioned suit that I could barely see out of, and like.
Plus, I mean, I don't know. I mean, a cave is cool for a little bit, but it's not... Like, what I want is to find an ancient ruin, basically.
Yeah, with all the modern treasure chests. Yeah,
with treasure chests and carvings on the walls. And
that tell you how to unlock a door that is somehow still there.
And nobody else has been there, so it hasn't been fucked up. And
what you want is a LARP.
A LARP that nobody else has done, yes.
Well, no, maybe that you know. Maybe, a LARP where the prize for winning it is they cut out your tongue. So you're never able to spoil it for anybody else. All right, I have an idea for our next business venture, fellas. Act two. Paul sends us an email and says, there is a video game that requires a blood offering to play. A first aid professor I had brought in one of these to emphasize that blood sugar monitors aren't always obvious, but sadly I couldn't actually play it. Yeah, there's a picture of this kid, like, you put some blood in and then it maybe hooks up to, like, a Game Boy Advance?
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. P.S. Could you explain your thoughts on the SimCity Always Online requirement? I'm on the edge about that because it wouldn't really affect me, but I don't particularly want to support a system that would exclude others from playing it. I mean, nobody really wants to hear this, but because I have that affliction where I am capable of having empathy for the man, I am unwilling to interpret the reasons for SimCity requiring you to be online all the time as just them being evil or greedy. Exactly in the way that Diablo 3 was. Well, I think that the fact that it is online all the time allows them to do some stuff that they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that's like,
I mean, with Diablo 3, my argument was I remember In the early days of Diablo 2, people, like, them having a bunch of complaints from customers being like, I just played through this game, got a bunch of cool stuff, and now I want to play with my friends, and I don't get to keep any of my cool stuff. And they're like, well, you played through in the single-player offline mode, but the multiplayer game is a totally different thing, so you can't keep any of the shit that you found, right? Like, that was a major complaint, and so one way of avoiding that is just have everybody play online. Right. And so, like, that, I like, that's where I thought it came out of. And I don't know if that's true. Like, there's probably a bunch of additional stuff.
I mean, that's at least a major component of it.
But with SimCity, I don't know of anybody that was like, you know what, I really need is to play this game online. Right. Like, that was.
But my argument in the forums here is that this is a different game than that, and this is one I don't think that EA mandated this game is going to have an always on requirement so that people will pirate it less, or so that we can have a pipe directly into their fucking eyeballs for our microtransaction mind goo or whatever. I think that having an always online internet connection is an acceptable system requirement for moving forward into the future. Like, I don't buy the argument that, well, someday you won't be able to play this anymore because they'll shut the servers down. There are any number of things that can happen that will make that not true. Yeah. And if that starts happening left and right, then I will start buying the argument that this is likely to happen with something else in the future.
I brought that up, and it wasn't so much that I was like pronouncing doom and gloom. It was just like I'm concerned that this will happen and it won't be playable.
I mean,
I'm also concerned that like if I don't buy it for 4 or 5 years and I want to go play it, and I'd be like, well, we don't actually have any servers online, so the only way to play it is by doing a bunch of like gray market, like set up a thing that looks like a proxy server.
I mean,
that it, like, you know,
if
like,
if at some point EA decides they have to turn their servers off, I am pretty certain that they'll release a patch. And if they, for some reason, don't, then some dude will write a patch. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, again, this is just always, like, I feel like I have a reputation for saying the developers are always right. And, you know, that comes from 10 years of being a developer arguing with people on forums who say things without understanding the reality on the other side, right? Like, I've been where they've been, but they haven't been where I've been. Mm-hmm. And sometimes sometimes you gotta fucking trust them.
Could you play Spore offline?
I don't think so.
I think you could. I don't.
There wasn't a bunch of hullabaloo about it, so I don't know if it had an always online.
I feel I still like it was Spore in a box.
Well, yeah, you bought it in a box.
I think you might have had to activate it online. I mean, like,
because I feel like a major component of it was.
I don't think you had to do that though. I think it shipped with a bunch of stuff that they made, right? And then it could pull in, you know, the big worm with a cock and balls or the word fuck on its back.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is my grade school whose classrooms are arranged in such a way that it spells the word fuck. Oh man.
You could totally use Rhodes to write fuck in cursive.
You know, when the first games came out that required a Pentium, not everybody had a Pentium, so not everybody could play this game. But it was one of the system requirements.
You know, I am actually a little bit sympathetic to the fact also, though, that, I mean, if I am going to name two games that would probably be more pirated than any other games, it would be the new Diablo and the new SimCity.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't think of SimCity as being that big of a...
You don't think so?
No.
Pirate target?
I mean, everything is a huge pirate target, right? Like, that is absolutely not an argument that anybody wants to hear me participate in again. But, like, I don't know that it's any more or less of a target for piracy than anything else.
Hmm.
You know, it is certainly a venerable franchise, but I don't know that it is. I don't know that those games are really that popular, right? Like, I mean, several of them came out and I didn't even hear about them, right? Like, this is the fifth one in the series, and I don't remember ever seeing anything about the fourth.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know anything about the fourth one. Okay,
you know. In short, it doesn't affect me, so it doesn't bother me. Privilege, privilege, privilege.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely can't get upset about it one way or the other because it's just not going to matter.
Yeah.
I mean, what I don't think is that there is some solid gold gun being pointed at them by the fucking evil mad scientists at EA that says this game needs to be online all the time. Like, I think at this point EA can't do anything. No game that is published by EA can do anything even the slightest bit controversial without just getting everybody's mouth shit in by the internet peanut gallery, and that is the last thing we want, is developers unable to make any controversial decisions, because that means there is no progress.
Yeah. And if stuff like this continues to happen and more so, then maybe that'll help be an impetus to get America caught up with the rest of the world in terms of broadband internet.
If more people are pissed off, they won't vote for you unless you let them play SimCity.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are a lot, you know, and I know that this is an argument that has no traction at all, but like, if you don't like it, you don't have to play it, you know? Mm. If you think that they are going in the wrong direction, the only message that you have the power to send them is, I'm not buying this game. And there has never been a better time to go out and find some indie shop who has made the exact game that you want to play, and it's fucking free because they still live in their mom's basement and don't, you know, can't make a living in this environment.
Yeah.
And
there's so many games and media and all sorts of shit coming out that you couldn't play all of it or watch all of it or read all of it if you had 100 lifetimes. So it's not necessary that you fill your time with this one.
And granted, you can make that argument about, you can level that argument against any criticism of anything, but
yeah.
I only level it against the ones that are wrong. Matthew Lanigan says, Dear Zach, I was listening to episode 91, and I have to say that I felt the same way about the economy in Path of Exile that you do. It seems completely artificial and obnoxious to dispense with a currency-based economy like they have, and barter economies do have a lot of very fundamental problems with them, like the coincidence of wants problem. Unfortunately, even with the system you propose, where you can say, I want X of item Y and we'll give Z of item A for them, the likelihood that anybody will be willing to perform that transaction is pretty small. He goes on further, but I think that that might work because of the sort of what do you call it? How would you characterize the Stone of Jordan? It's like a proxy currency,
sure,
right? Is that there is a word for it? It's like it is like a de facto currency, right? Just people have decided to treat it as a currency, which seems to be what they have done with Chaos Orbs. Most of the transactions that I see involve either Gem Cutters Prisms or Chaos Orbs.
Huh.
And then there is that website that does all these other translations, and so people. So I think that when I wanted that Lightning Strike gem, like I either could have, you know, started a new Templar and leveled him up to 10 to get it as a quest reward, and then put it in my shared stash, which was a sweet ass trick that somebody. It was a sweet trick that somebody taught me about a skill that I wanted that I had never found the gem for that you got at level 2, which was very quick for me to go just get one of those. I'm like, all right, nice. You know, if I wanted that, there would have been one for sale for something that I had and was willing to pay for it if that marketplace existed. Because it isn't like there are items that are treated as currency. It's just that there are 15 of them, right? And no fluidity between them. The other day, though, continues Matthew, I came across an extension for PostgreSQL named Open Barter, which is able to solve problems like this. Ultimately, it's the same thing you proposed, but it can solve transactions with up to 64 parties so that everyone ends up with what they want, thus solving the problem of the coincidence of wants. It'd be really interesting to see Path of Exile implement a self-solving barter economy like that, because otherwise the economy seems unscalable and unsustainable, which doesn't bode well for a game which otherwise does some really interesting things. Rinton. I hope, you know, I gave him some money, and now my character, my archer that I'm playing with Chris, has a sweet blue glow on her bow. And every time I get a new bow, I'm going to have to put the bow in the microtransaction panel to retrieve the glow from it so that I can put it on another thing. I hope that it won't let me, like, just thoughtlessly vendor sell my glow bow.
Glow bow.
Yeah. Yeah, a globo is like a genetic mutation that you find in homeless people sometimes where their asses light up. Charlie Gilroy sent us some Kentucky Derby winners.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Thanks.
Troy Len said, Riff's idea for building a game sounded a lot like the Google Image Labeler, which, yeah, that was actually a sort of a game project. Thing that they did, right?
I don't remember what the
I was about was. The game that you play where you, to help them tag.
Oh, right.
To
okay. get
to gather metadata.
Mm-hmm.
This is like Kevin's four pictures, one Cup. Word, but there was a point to
yeah.
it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, there was that like the ESP game, I think, is like that where it's you are trying to predict what the like you both see the same picture and you're trying to predict what the other person is going to type. Or what they have typed, and it was getting descriptors for words, or sorry, getting descriptors for pictures, but it started rejecting the most common ones to try to dive a little deeper into what the pictures meant or represented, which was pretty cool. I don't know if that was Google or if that was some like university research project.
Well, guys. I've had a really good time recording this episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you.
Yep, yep.
Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could send us an email, VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or they could check out our forums, accessible via link at VideoGamesHotDog.com.
But either way, no matter what they do, it is vitally important that they tune in next week for the next very special episode of Video Games Hot Dog.
Indeed.
Amen.
Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
I could play Red Faction Guerrilla with Richard fucking Garriott.
How about Alone in the Dark with Aldous Duxley?
Well, I'd play Altered Beast with Art Barfunkel.